I would like to request that if you are talking before you can say anything, please mention your name, so then we can know who you are. We still have to learn a lot in this committee. We have to know you. We must call you by name. Thank you very much. So over to you, SIU.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair of SCOPA, Honorable Member who's facilitating the session, Honorable Members of SCOPA. My name is Advocate Emily Chidi. I'm the head of Special Investigating Unit. I will allow my colleagues, or just in the interest of time, to introduce themselves. And I see at the back, we've got our colleagues from the Anti-Corruption Task Team Secretariat who were here with us yesterday. Thank you, colleagues, for your support. You can just start
with this. Morning, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. I'm Caroline Mankur. I'm the Deputy Head of the SIU.
Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member. I'm Leonard Sekheto. I'm the Chief National Investigation Officer.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. I'm Nazreen Pando, and I'm Head of Communications and Stakeholder Management.
Thank you very much, SIU. Can I come on this side? I was thinking that we will do it when somebody is on the floor, but You can proceed.
Thank you. My name is Mervyn Tess. I'm the whip of the committee. Thank you.
I'm Sakum Zisonia, the member of the committee.
Good morning, members. My name is Faith Benze from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Morning, honorable members of the committee. Mr. Makabula, the researcher for the committee.
Morning, members and stakeholders. My name is Ndando Gazi Tenge. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Gugu Shabalala. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Morning, Ben Kali, committee chair of SCOPA.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Sandra Kalkova.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Snitlasha Lukaku from Parliamentary Monitoring Group. I'm a monitor.
Thank you very much.
Morning, Chair. Matt Johnston from the organization on doing tax abuse.
Thank you. Over to you, Advocate.
No, thank you very much, honorable members. Can I just also record the presence of our colleague who was here with us yesterday. He just stepped in, Advocate Mashodi Moafe. He's the director at State Security Agency responsible for domestic. Thank you, Advocate, for your presence. Honorable Chair and Member, we appreciate the opportunity to come and engage as the Special Investigation Unit with the SCOPA. We were part of the ACTT yesterday, but today we would like to really take the committee through what SIU is about. We have had interactions with SCOPA in the previous administration, and we're hoping to continue to have that that interaction in some of the matters that we deal with, and we will reflect them in the presentation. We will keep to the time allocated to us. In terms of the schedule, we were allocated from 11:20 to 12:20, but because it looked like the time has went on, but we will still try to keep to 12:20. If you page on, we'll start off directly. We'll go through the table of contents. We'll name the content as we start off. We start off with the SIU mandate. This is on slide number 3. It starts off there. Slide number 4 indicates the legislation which gives us our mandate. Our mandate is derived from the Special Investigating Unit and Special Tribunals Act 74 of 1996. This legislation, and I'm informed that the members have been placed in possession of our late piece of legislation, a booklet that looks like that. This contains our act. This legislation makes provision for special investigating units and special tribunals. So essentially, those units are created and established by the president by proclamation. But up to today, there's only been one special investigating unit that has been proclaimed and established. This was established by proclamation R118 of 2001. So since 2001, there has been only one special investigating unit. And there was also, at some point, a special tribunal that was proclaimed and established, but it ceased to operate at some point, and we'll come back to that point. The president has now recently re-established that special tribunal in February of this year. We'll come back to that. Our vision, chair members, is to be the state preferred and trusted anti-corruption forensic investigation and litigation agency. We have worked and workshopped and took views around this vision. And we crafted it deliberately and said we would like to be preferred service provider for the state institution. We use the word preferred simply because we know that there's competition in this space. But we would like the state institutions to continue to utilize the services of SIU as against the services of other forensic accounting companies. We believe we've got the same skills, we've got the same knowledge, that we can do the same way. But obviously we understand that we have to demonstrate and prove that we can do our work effectively. We've got our mission that emphasizes the integrity with which we work and investigate serious malpractices or maladministration in the state, as well as any conduct which may seriously harm the interests of the public. And we also institute civil litigation. This is the part that any other agency in the ACTT space does not have the power to institute civil litigation. SIU is the only one. And that we do by instituting civil litigation, and we'll come back and state to the committee how does it happen. We also have referred to the special tribunal where we can institute this civil litigation. Now, based on our legislation, the legislation gives us some focused function, which is to mainly on the bottom left to investigate corruption, malpractices, and maladministration, and this is in focused on the state institutions. But what we are doing is that because we have had the view that we shouldn't just be focusing on corruption in the state institutions or in the public, we also ensure that where the corruption points us to any private sector company or individual, we pursue that even in the private sector. We indicated our powers to institute civil litigation. In the middle, we've got powers that are conferred to any anti-corruption agency or investigation authority. We've got the power to subpoena, search, and seize evidence and interrogate witnesses under oath, and this is done once the proclamation is issued. As I said, we've got the powers to institute civil litigation. Some of the powers we do not have, on the right hand side of the slide, bottom right, we do not have the power to arrest. If we find that there's evidence that indicates to criminality, we then refer those matters to NPA as required by our law, and we take the process from there. If there's a need for the arrest, then the SAPS comes in. If it's the HOCS or any other part of the SAPS, we do that. As we refer matters for disciplinary action, we expect the state institutions, accounting officers, and accounting authority, whether it's a board or an individual who's holding that role, we expect actions to be taken. We've heard yesterday that some of the worries around the space is that the sanctions that are often meted out do not really meet the seriousness of the offense, and that's part of what we will engage on going forward. We also have close relationships with other relevant agencies, such as the South African Revenue Service, FIC, and the others. Honorable members, this is an enabling legislation. Our mandate derives from this act. Further on slide number 5, it's really just to, just unpack or elaborate on some of the mandates of ours. We focus on serious maladministration in connection with the affairs of the state institution. Also an improper or unlawful conduct by any of the state institutions, unlawful appropriation or expenditure of public money or property, unlawful, irregular, or unapproved acquisitive act, which this could be in the procurement space, to acquiring any asset or services. We look at that and ensure that it happens in accordance with the regulations. Intentional or negligent loss of public money or damage to public property. We also have the powers to investigate corruption in connection with the affairs of state institutions, unlawful or improper conduct by any person that may cause or may cause the harm to the interest of the public or any category thereof. Now, this being the mandate and the focus areas, we have got the approach that we use in implementing our work. The next slide talks to case assessment, and the case assessment kicks on once we receive the allegation. Allegations are received from members of the public, from state institutions, from parliamentary committees such as SCOPA or portfolio committee or any other committee of parliament. Now, what happens once we have received that allegation? We assess and verify the allegation based on any evidence that's available. If necessary, we gather additional information that is required to ensure that we draft the proclamation. Once we have that, we draft the motivation for the proclamation and the schedule that is applicable to the proclamation. That sets out the scope of our investigation. What do we do once we've done that? We submit it to the Department of Justice for processing. In the main, the Minister of Justice has to sign off before it goes to the President. So once that process is completed and the President is satisfied of the scope and the content of the proclamation, the proclamation is then issued. As we indicate there, that our formal powers that I've referred to earlier on, the power to seize, power to interrogate, only kicks in once the proclamation is signed off. So at that time, then we are, once the proclamation is signed by the President, is gazetted, only then can we really kick off with our formal investigation. So once the proclamation is issued, we are then ready to kick off with the investigation. This slide indicates how is it that we really follow up, and again, it's still mentioned the receipt of allegation, but I've covered that, and the issuing of the proclamation. The third block from the left says, once the proclamation is published and we are ready to kick off with the investigation, we draft our project plan, the investigation project. We then also draft the letter of engagement. That is the letter that really, between SIU and the state institution that is focused at in the investigation, to say this is how we're going to do our work and this is how it's going to cost. But in terms of the legislation, we do charge fees for our investigation. Now, in that process, we collect and analyze evidence. As I said, we conduct interviews and obtain affidavits, any other manner that is legally within our powers, we use to investigate. As we investigate corruption, we also use trace technology that we are trained on. That includes analyzing of bank statements, the tracing of the movement of money, and then we involve other agencies if need be. So once we have investigated, and we'll come in detail to the outcomes, the next block says we refer matters to the relevant authorities. I'll come to that in the next slide. If we find that there's evidence to institute civil litigation, we institute that to recover money for the state institution. And once we have completed the investigation, we then present the report in terms of our law to the office of the president. And then in the new strategy, we have included that we need to follow up on the referrals that we have made before the report is submitted to the president, so that we are satisfied that our referrals are being acted upon. So the note at the bottom there, we say we are in regular contact with accounting authorities and accounting officers of the state institutions to follow up on our recommendations, because we would like to make sure that we make the impact that is required. Be it disciplinary hearings, we want to know that those are implemented. We would like to know that the civil litigation is also continuing properly, and the NPA referrals. I'll come back to those. And the next slide deal with the outcomes now. So how we reach the outcomes, Chairperson and members, is that once we start off with our investigation, if we find that, for example, if it's an investigation on an irregular agreement or contract, if I use the example that is now out there in the media, SABC contract, security contract, if I use that as an example, we investigated and we found that the security contract, and we cover it in the presentation, we found that this contract was, we found evidence indicating that the contract was entered into irregularly. The process was not followed. So we make a pronouncement. We then inform the state institution. So what do? We then institute civil litigation to get that contract declared invalid and to be set aside. And after that happens, we then seek to recover whatever the state institution would have lost. So that is the civil litigation part, which is on the left-hand side of that slide. The next block says one of the outcomes is the disciplinary action referral. How do we do that? Again, if we start our investigation and we find that in that example of an irregular contract, more often there are officials involved that process this contract or tender. If we find that the officials are guilty of misconduct, either they have not followed process, they have not followed policy, we then take that evidence to the state institution. We then require the accounting authority to institute disciplinary process. But more often it doesn't end there. And in fact, this is what we are indicating and second to do even more. In line with the discussions yesterday, we do not just want to end up at the lower level officials. We also find out what was the role of the accounting authority in case of a state-owned entity. Normally it would be the board. We also investigate what was the role of the board. And if the board had some role in terms of the authority that it has, and that role has not been exercised appropriately, we ensure that we make that finding and follow up on that as well. So the next outcome is the referral to the NPA. The referrals to the NPA are also executed in the same fashion. If we investigate, during our investigation, we find that there's criminality, we then take the evidence. In terms of our legislation, we are required, because we don't have the power to prosecute. Then we refer the matter to NPA. NPA is required by our legislation. The provision in the Act says once we have referred the matter to NPA, NPA has to deal with that matter in the manner that serves the interest of the party. That is what the law says at the moment. But we are all at one between ourselves and NPA, that what the legislation means by that. We expect the NPA to go through the evidence and then make a decision whether to prosecute or not to prosecute. So if they make a decision to prosecute, it is our preference, because we want to hold the responsible people accountable. If they make a decision not to prosecute, we would like to understand the basis of making that decision not to prosecute. And then we can take it from there. Right, and then on the extreme right, is another example of referrals to other regulatory authorities, an example being SARS, where in our investigation we find that there's contravention of the revenue legislation. We then refer it to SARS to deal with that and ultimately recover the revenue for the state. These are the outcomes of our investigation. These are really the main outcomes. And contrary to how other stakeholders believe, that we wait for the report to be issued to the president before we reach these outcomes. That is incorrect. These outcomes are reached even long before the report is submitted to the president. But in the presidential report, we do make them reference that this has been the outcome and this has been referred. So we do that simply because time in dealing with corruption or maladministration, time is of the essence. And later on we indicate to the committee that as part of the new strategy, we have said the turnaround times are important in terms of dealing with these matters as quickly as possible. So these referrals are done as and when they are picked up. And then the report is then presented. So at the bottom of the slide is the so-called systemic recommendation. When we do our investigation, we come across some of the inefficiencies in the state institutions, be it governance inefficiencies, process inefficiencies. So we do make systemic recommendations on how the environment, the control environment, can be improved. And it's obviously the state institution to incorporate that as part of the improvement. Right, the next slide, which is slide number 11 and 12, deals with the case for change. After we took up our roles at SIU, we had to assess the efficiency and the effectiveness of SIU and the impact which it makes out there in the public. So some of the challenges that we picked up at the time, this is really just a summary of those challenges. We've got a comprehensive case for change that we have documented, and that case for change has informed our new strategy. It has also informed our new governance structure, new value chain, new operating model, which we point to in the presentation. So part of the challenges was that the financial model of SIU needs improvement. And this is the financial model which says when we investigate, we charge fees. We have seen up to now that the state institutions, not all of them really do pay as required. And that is what the potential, that it can hold us back in terms of our resources to do our work. And on that one, as part of the improvement, we've started the process to amend the SIU legislation so that we build a sustainable financial model. And we're engaging National Treasury, we're engaging all the stakeholders that need to be engaged. We also realized that the turnaround times were poor or needed to be improved. And we have, up to now, and these challenges were identified around 2016, 2017. Up to now, we have put in place measures to improve this, and we believe that they are making an impact. We are still busy with the ICT environment that required improvement. We also identified that there's inadequate individual and organizational performance management system. We are also improving on that so that we hold everyone at SIU accountable to ensure that we all deliver as expected. The other issue that we realized, and this probably impacts on the presentation of yesterday, that most of the agencies, although we've got our own enabling legislation and so on, but there's a potential to duplicate. There's a potential to have one agency, HOCS, investigating this matter, and we're also investigating, but we've put in place measures so that we can at least avoid that. Once we receive allegations to investigate, there's processes to check. To check either with the public protector, check with HOCS to make sure that there's no duplication. But that's something of one of the methods that we identified. We also identified that there was a lack of engagement between SIU and other stakeholders, and we also elaborate on that later on. We have since improved that so that there is continuous engagement with state institutions where we investigate so that they can know what is it that we are investing, how far we are, what are the outputs that we are bringing on. As I said, the case for change informed our new strategy. So the next slide focuses on what our strategic focus has been since 2016-2017. So our strategic focus has been to achieve appropriate legal outcomes, the outcomes that I've mentioned earlier on, against perpetrators of maladministration, malpractice, and corruption. That is the impact that we want to make. That is what the public and our stakeholders, including COPA, that's probably what we expect from us as we do our work. And we want to also influence proactively systemic improvements. This is what we have indicated earlier on, and the behavioral root cause of administrative irregularities and corruption. The behavioral root causes obviously talks onto the people side of things. We would like to make sure that the government improves on that score. So our APPs since then have been outlining activities for us to become also more proactive and to ensure greater preventive measures. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, yesterday you indicated that we needed to be also on the prevention side of this war against corruption. We needed to also play a role. All of this should address the cause of maladministration, malpractice, and corruption. So we believe that if we implement this strategy as it is, we should be able to see an improvement and a positive impact on the reduction, if not elimination of corruption and maladministration. So, briefly, in summary, the strategic focus has focused on the following focus areas. We have defined our new value chain, which is the value chain that would say, how is it that we assess matters from receipt of allegation, investigation, and up to the reporting. Again, we want to make sure that once those allegations are received, we accelerate the conversion of allegations into proclamations. And we must continue to give feedback to the whistleblowers. Make sure that they understand where we are, so that they can know that we are acting on their report of corruption. Establish capacity for corruption, maladministration, and malpractice, prevention through public education, data analytics, which we'll come back to, and also the scenarios of corruption, which we can then identify and share with the state institution. We would like to make sure that we monitor and evaluate the impact of SIU objectives. Standardize the manner in which cases are scoped through the standard operating procedures. Everyone at SIU has to understand how is it that the investigation is conducted there within a specific operating standard. Again, of importance, improve the quality of investigation and turnaround times of investigation. We want to expand on the monitoring and evaluation of case management, including a central case registration system. This has been implemented, the system is working, it's also effective, it's helping us to track where we are. Each and every allegation is tracked electronically. We want to ensure that the long-term financial stability of SIU is maintained by revising the funding model. We want to create capacity to prevent the reoccurrence of corruption, maladministration, and malpractice. This is the prevention side. Monitor the implementation of the SIU remedial action. We do not want to just refer and get these outcomes and we don't monitor where they are. That is one of the critical focus areas at the moment, and we'll come back to that as well. I mentioned the need for amendment of SIU Act. Once that is ready to go through the parliamentary process, we'll probably update this committee as well. The improvement on the governance of SIU. We've got slides dealing with the governance. The next slide is a bit of a pictorial business slide, but it really, in a sense, just connects the various focus areas of the strategy. In the middle being the guiding vision, which is the 2030 vision of government, as contained in the National Development Plan. And on the left-hand side, we do indicate that we are evidence, our work is evidence-driven. Any finding that we reach is based on the evidence that we have collected. And again, we obviously aspire to create and to achieve the appropriate legal outcomes. And on the right-hand side is all of those processes and in terms of how to achieve our vision of becoming the state's preferred service provider. This, in a sense, really pictorizes our strategic roadmap. We still say for 1920, but it's not likely to change materially in the few years to come. Now, based on this new approach, we assess our value chain, and I won't go through it in detail, Chairperson, in the interest of time. This value chain depicts the model of operating that we've already presented. From the time we receive the allegation to the findings, to the outcomes and to the remedial action. So the value chain has really not been changed that much based on the changes that we have implemented, but we have implemented now focused functional areas at the bottom of the slide. The functional areas are those capabilities on the structure that we have created to make sure that we are able to capacitate ourselves to achieve these outcomes. The next two slides really is the value chain and the focus areas of the value chain. High level, if I just make high level notes, on slide 17, if we still emphasize that all allegations are controlled and monitored, and you'll see at the top of that slide is the same value chain, receipt of allegations up until to the reporting and monitoring. It may not be as readable as that, but it's the same blocks as they appeared in the value chain. We want to increase the number of allegations that are converted into cases, new targeted capacity to educate the public. This is, we want to play a role in the prevention side of things. And the next slide on the right-hand side is also the call-out notes that we are mentioning around our new value chain. We want to monitor the SIU impact. Honorable members, total transformation of scoping of cases, improve the quality of investigation and turnaround times. The monitoring and evaluation, the public sector intelligence, this is the data analytics part. And then the advisory capacity to prevent reoccurrence, this is still on the prevention side. The next slide, as I indicated, that the case for change informed the new strategy. It also informed the new value chain that we've just been through. It also informed the operating model. As we speak, this operating model has been implemented, and the operating model seeks, in brief, to do the following: to focus on the national cases and also make sure that we've got a focused central support, which is the enablement function, what we call the support services. We also make sure now that we enable and to empower the provinces, which were at the time referred to as regions. We want to make sure that the provinces run on their own to make sure that the allegations that are reported in the provinces, we do not waste time by making sure that they're investigated, you know, monitored from the center. That we have seen that it creates a delay in the investigation. So without going into detail on the operating model, this is what we have said will inform us as we operate. The note, the call-out note on the left-hand side is the national cases, the quality of delivery, empowerment of provinces. That's really in the main the import of that operating model. Chairperson and members, we wouldn't be able to implement all of that if the governance of SIU is not improved. We have sought to make sure that we assess our governance model. How is it that the governance committees are created? Who sits on those committees? Independent committees that are monitoring our operations. An example of the independent committee is the audit committee, obviously, the HR committee. We've got also the ICT committee. But we also have executive committees, like your EXCO, the normal EXCO that any organization would have. We've got the risk committee and so on. I've mentioned them all in brief. On slide number 21 is the governance, is the organizational structure. So the new strategy, as it is always said, that the structure follows strategy. The new strategy led up to the new structure. That's the structure of the executive committee and the provinces. So that in brief depicts the structure of the organization. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we will not go in detail on the governance structure. Slide number 22 to 26 depicts the governance committees that we have in place. I've already mentioned some of them, but we are making sure that we operate in accordance with this governance structure. So that is depicted up until slide number 26. I will not go into detail on those, but the honorable members can raise any question that they may have on that. Slide number 27, based on all that we have done so far, we have identified all the improvements, we have identified the governance improvements, identified improvements on the risk side, either on the financial risk management processes, people management processes, and systems management. Once we have done that, we have definitely seen some improvements, and those improvements are reflected as part of the audit outcomes. Honorable members, we depict that on slide number 27. We have seen consecutively an improvement in the audit outcomes and maintaining a clean audit since 2016-2017 when we started with the improvements. 2017-18 we maintained the clean audit. 18-19, which is this year, yes, we also maintained that clean audit. We know that it's quite a daunting task. Once you achieve a clean audit, it becomes a challenge to maintain it. But we would like to make sure that we maintain that going forward. We sourced this is the source of this slide is from the Auditor General's report. The legend there on the audit council on the right hand side is the legend that is used by the Auditor General. Slide 26 really just explains what the clean audit opinion consists of. On this one, I'm sure we'll be preaching to the experts. This committee deals on a daily basis with the audit outcomes. So this is really what we seek to maintain as clean audit. We would like to move on now, that once we have done all these improvements on the way we operate, how we do our results, we have also, again, not going through that in detail, we have also seen an improvement on the performance information, and this has been audited and signed off. That is reflected on pages 30 to 33. If you look on page 30, there was that this was 2015-16. There was a number of red blocks which indicated that there was a requirement for improvement. The next slide 31. Honourable Chair members, I don't really need to go into the content and the figures. If there's questions, we are able to take. You'll see on the next year there was only two red blocks, and that was related to our recovery. And the recoveries are unfortunately what the public looks for, that what is it that we have recovered? The headline. The headline when we release our results is, you know, how much have we recovered, you know? So we sought to say what is it that we need to improve in that space. In the main was the turnaround time in the court and turnaround times in recovering assets. We improved that, and then on the next year, 17-18, we saw some improvement. And then only one block was red. This is the block that's related to the recoveries that are dependent on our courts, and hence the re-establishment of the special tribunal. So with the re-establishment of the special tribunal, we should see the actual value of money and our assets recovered. We should see an improvement. So that was the red part. Even before the special tribunal really kicks off and operates, we have sought to make sure that we engage the judges' presidents in the provinces to assist us in fast-tracking the SIU cases in the court. And we have seen some improvement. There we go, in 18-19 we are reporting, and this is operational results, by the way, operating results year-on-year comparison. 18-19 we're seeing 100% achievement on our operations results. Compared to the results that we have seen over the years. Now, having shown all of this improvement and communicating with the stakeholders through the Department of Communication and Stakeholders, we've had various stakeholder engagements across provinces. We continue to make sure that we raise awareness, and we have seen the pipeline of colloquially, I would call it the business. We've seen our business grow. Although we really don't want to see our business growing, for obvious reasons, that our business is to deal with maladministration and corruption. We do not want to see that growing. But we have said to the public that we have improved, and we have seen the number of proclamations increase. The next slide, which is slide number 34, we have seen the increase of about 61% if you date back to 1516 up to now. And this now goes hand in hand with the increase of the capacity, proper resourcing to make sure that we are able to meet those challenges. Chairperson, Honourable Chair members, I'm looking at the time. The next part really repeats our outcomes in detail, and we have taken a snapshot of a five-year view. The NPA referrals, those are the numbers. 14-15, 171. 18-19, we've seen 331. Those are all the cases that we have referred to the MPA, and the next slide, slide 36, indicate what are we doing to make sure that MPA works with us to make sure that there are prosecutions that we see. So all of those matters, we've got MOU with MPA, we are seeing some improvement. Yesterday we also spoke to the MDPP. We are going to prioritize some of the cases, whether it's the cases relating to ESCOM, like Mr. Jimeni, or any other prioritization area. We do understand that all areas are important. We have to make sure that we execute, but we'll prioritize some of those cases that attract public interest hugely. The next referral is the referrals of disciplinary hearings. Just a quick explanation. On the left-hand side, 14-15, if you see 3,769, the explanation of that spike at that time was that there was one investigation at the time that was focused at ESCOM, and the number of referrals, disciplinary referrals, of people who had conflicts of interest at ESCOM. And we're still seeing that phenomenon persisting, even with the new investigation that we are conducting. We referred quite a number of individuals at ESCOM who are employed by ESCOM with a conflict of interest. And then, now, because of the nature of other investigations with the following years, we then continued to see the referrals plateauing up to 18-19. What are we doing to make sure that we follow up? We follow up with accounting executive or accounting authorities. The presidency has taken a decision to release all the SIU reports to state institutions, and with the question of what has happened with consequence management. So we want to make sure that all of those are received back to make sure that the consequence management is implemented. The next slide, 39, is about civil litigation. Again, a five-year view. By 18-19, the value of civil litigation is at 7.9 billion. And if you think back to the State of the Nation address, the President mentioned a figure of about 14.7 billion. This is the 14.7 billion that's in our books, which we need to go out there and ensure that through the special tribunal or any other court, we are able to ultimately connect. The next slide just indicates what are we doing to make sure that the special tribunal is set up. That process is underway. It's run by the Department of Justice. But last but one bullet point, number two from the bottom, the special tribunal is envisaged to be operational by or during October 2019. That is the value of the civil litigation value of matters on our books, 14.7 billion. We also do in our work, members, honorable members, we also do international work. Part of what is done in the ACTT, the programs that were presented yesterday, we are part of that, and we make sure that the country meets its international obligations. We work with DPSA, we work with DERCO, we work with all of them, and those are the forums where we participate to make sure that the country meets its obligations. I will not go in detail on our work. The next slide, slide number 44. That is our work on the ACTT. ACTT presented its work yesterday. I'll not go into detail. SIU convened what is called Program 4. And Program 4 deals with risk-based approach, identifying vulnerable sectors, those sectors vulnerable to corruption. So, but just to indicate to this committee what has happened so far. We couldn't at least detail this yesterday, and we won't go into too much detail. The assessment of vulnerable sectors on slide 45, we are showing those sectors. It was also contained in the ACTT space of presentation yesterday. We have assessed all of this as vulnerable sectors, and we would like to make sure that one way or another ACTT prioritizes this sector. What has happened to date? The legends that you see, the green ones, is the health and construction, and SOE is also next. What have we done so far? On the health side, just to demonstrate, we have established the anti-corruption health forum. We have included
all sectors of the society, civil society, government, business, to make sure that that area is focused on. Just an example of some of the matters that we are dealing with. On the health side, you will see on that slide that's presented now, slide number 46. 1, 2, 3, 4 from the top is National Health Services. That came through after we've established this anti-corruption health sector. Gauteng Provincial Department of Health, although this was already underway when we created the health sector. The Health Professions Council, where we're dealing with irregularities in doctor registration. So this is just an example of how we're going to deal with prioritized sectors. We want to see action in these spaces. You'll see all the state-owned entities. We're just giving examples there, ESCOM, and some of the outcomes. South African Broadcasting Corporation, state-owned entity, state information technology. Those are some of the examples in this prioritized area and what have been the outcomes so far. So we would like to make sure that we continue on that basis. Honorable members, we have also touched on our APP without going into detail on it. The APP really reflects all of what we have presented today. Our new strategy, our new targets, our new value chain. So on slide number 49, the three programs in our APP, focusing on the support services, focusing on making sure that our investigations are done properly, proactive and systematic improvement. Without going into detail on those areas, the stakeholder survey, which is on slide 52, without reading through all of them, the committee has got their the presentation with them. What we've done is that we would like to understand what our stakeholders are saying about us, whether they view our services as effective, how is our interaction with them, and this was conducted by an independent organization, not ourselves. We have made sure that we outsource this so that it's independent and we get so what we can call reliable results. And we've seen satisfactory results, which we really want to maintain going forward. And the rest of the slides really go into some of the focus areas of those that survey. I will not go through into detail in those outcomes. The market data analytics was really to say to the committee that this is what one of the areas that we want to focus on. As busy as it may look, that slide, but it's really to say we are going to try to now use the data that we have and convert it into information that we can share with the government state institutions to say these are the, call it vulnerable sectors, these are the efficiencies that we come across, this is how you can improve. I'm going to just pause here, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, without going into really details on those outcomes. These are some of the methods that we have presented to SCOPA before. We thought we could just include this information so that SCOPA can see what has happened so far on the SABC, which we have engaged with SCOPA before. The other one is the Department of Water and Sanitation. We are presenting some of the results that we have reached to date, although some of the investigations are still going on. Without going into those details in detail, we see we are out of our time now, but the committee has said yesterday that you will be engaging with us going forward. We will hear from you in terms of which area you want to focus at, and there was a comment yesterday in terms of how is it that we want to collaborate with we just included a slide, which is the last one really, on how we would like to interact with COPA. The top one, obviously, we said once our legislation goes through Parliament, I'm sure SCOPA would one way or another become aware, we would like to take SCOPA through the amendments. And again, as the department appear in front of SCOPA, we would have had some of the referrals that we have made. We would like to make sure that the consequence management, disciplinary hearings are carried through, and all of the other referrals. Assistance with the recovery of outstanding debt, whichever way is this. What we have done, actually, with the Auditor General is that when they audit us as SIU, we said, why is it that you don't also raise findings in those other departments that owe us, like we would do in any other environment where there are creditors and debtors? And they have, in this year's audit, to really to their credit, they have gone and found out in other state institutions whether they recognize the debt and whether they whether there's payment plans. So we are really happy that is now recognized in their books. Yes, as we have said, SCOPA can refer matters to SIU, and we are saying SCOPA should really encourage that all state institutions should refer matters through to SIU, because we would like to be the preferred state service provider. In that way, it would be government, you know, taking charge of ensuring that we investigate in the state institution space. We believe that it's economical in the sense that we don't charge as exorbitant fees as the other private sector players. We would like to believe that our fees are reasonable as compared to the other state entities like your AG and the others. So these are some of the pointers, Chairperson. I had asked my colleagues to be ready to talk to those matters, SABC and Department of Water and Sanitation, if need be. So I see we are 5 minutes beyond our time. I'm going to pause here, Honourable Chair and Honourable Facilitator and members. Thank you very much for the opportunity. We are ready to take questions that SCOPA may have.
Thank you very much, SIU, for coming here. As our chairperson did mention before that, we still have to meet. We still have to hear what happened in those institutions where you were investigating. That is very important. As the team, we have to know. As far as we're going to proceed with the job, but we have to get it from you. I'm going to give it to the honorable members to ask any questions or comments on the report what you gave us.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On page 45, page 45 of your report, the vulnerable sector, I see how you prioritize your health and construction, then the next project will be the current one with SO East, and then you got sports, you got finance, and then sports, you got local government. I don't know how you prioritize that order, but I think the most vulnerable sector is local government. I think that's the most vulnerable sector, local government, and finance, as I see a spot, finance, we had finance here this morning, but we didn't even very clever people in finance, so we should maybe just park finance for now, we'll deal with finance later on. We need to go to that sector, local government, where cowboy style of operation.
Yes.
And there's no consequence management there. We need to prioritize local government in those countries. Local government municipalities, they must basically know that in every municipality there is an SIU there,
yes,
watching them. We must prioritize it there. So that's where all the rot is happening there. And sometimes it just slips through the auditors. They don't pick these things up here. Those people, the way they operate and do things. And I would like to see a situation where we prioritize local government and deal with local government. So all councillors in the country can know that there's consequences. Well, they see SIU as here at the national level, and they don't really see it as there by them. Must prioritize them,
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. In appreciating the presentation that is going to be I wish we can find more time to interact with it. First and foremost, Honorable Chairperson, is to say, how does SIU interact with the public? What is the kind of work that the SIU is doing, especially getting to understand this presentation today? I'm not sure if they understand that the public is beginning to lose trust in all state organs. Hence, you find every day, each and every corner, there's protest march. There's protest march not because people are confused. There's protest march because majority of time our people get frustrated. You know that there was this tender that went out and everything else happened in the process. There were serious allegations. It's the third or fourth year now. Nothing is coming out to say exactly what transpired there. So, in further alluding to what Honorable Louis said, that local government should be a priority, but also the fact that the SIU should begin, I'm not sure if you do, interact with people directly so that people understand what you are doing. This is very good work, but because there's this lack of trust into government, now as we are being brushed with the same brush, all of us, like we are these useless people who are not doing anything. Maybe as politicians it's fine for us, but it cannot be fine for SIU because we are not politicians. So there should be in our country a situation where people will say, at least there's SIU. At least, as it is the case now, there's public protector. People are looking of that kind of state organs that can assist, because we can no longer run away from the fact that corruption is rampant in our country. So this is what I wanted to raise. Secondly, I hear in the there are page 13, SIU is monitoring and evaluating the impact of your objectives. I would want to see you doing that and to be known by anybody that you are also doing that. Secondly, on the same page, you are talking about the amendment of the SIU Act. I hope you have timelines. I think you are beginning to be more effective as such. You identify guests and now you are putting now some ways to make yourself very sharp. And now there is this process of this act. We also need to know the timeline. What we are looking for is a solution, and in that, the whole country is desperate. It's not like you are really overhauling yourself because we have realized, but there's a need of you doing that, because I'm not sure if we want to see the country collapsing because everybody goes to the street to say enough is enough. Why there are such a organs that have to assist. Lastly, you are saying you are improving governance within yourself. I hope you have identified that again. I guess hence you will put that, and then what progress are you making? So that we can all be happy to say what you have identified is in fact really assisting, because you are putting something in the third one check. Page 19. The empowering of provincial accountability and business development. Everything happens in a province. But everything happens in a province. I am from a particular province. How would love to see that you are claiming to be doing really happening?
happening out of the Eastern Cape. We are sitting with the scandal of our lifetime, Mandela funeral. Mm-hmm. It's no longer, everybody's concerned. And now that it is with yourselves, we hope move with speed so that we can conclude that. Because if you cannot conclude the Mandela funeral scandal, what else can you do? For an ordinary person in the street, if you can't in time conclude that particular one, then there isn't much that you can do because everything is equal to all of you, like politicians and SIU. So I'm putting that chairperson as something to say, yes, there is progress, there's hope, but there's a need to give more information, but also there's a need to move with the speed. I see that you have really identified, and the president has made some pronunciations, but we are along the wall insofar as corruption is concerned. With this one, that suggests that you should be in our SCOPA meeting, as well as I'm sure with the AG working very well with, I guess even at the provincial level, because that's where the real things are happening. I'm from a province where in the budget of a particular department is exhausted as we speak. It is exhausted because they are paying lawyers, bogus lawyers, for bogus things. That's the situation. So it's known, it's no longer, I mean, somebody's mind. It is happening as we speak. We see some progress, we get to hear, but if SIU can speak eloquently and all the time to say this is where we are with this matter, especially when we have provincial offices, let there be relevance in what you are doing on a daily basis with what is happening in the province, insofar as corruption, because we are in here as politicians, we are here to keep corruption with the act that allows you to. But Chairperson, I want to appreciate the presentation. I wish we can meet with the SIU more frequently so that we can even monitor what were the commitments in the last financial year, so that we can together agree to say there's progress. Even if there is, at least we are really concerned about the time, so that we don't have this that we are seeing. For me, Chairperson Bankrate, if it's not war between ourselves and our people, I'm not sure what else it is. Because every day, in each one corner or the other, there's protest. And in the process of protest, because majority of time, police are being overwhelmed. People die because they might not be able to manage all those groupings and all the strategies that are put in place by the people, because it's something that happens in a manner that will never, it's unprecedented, in fact, to be honest, Chairperson, sometimes. The way things are happening out there, because, Chairperson, I want to include to say, the corruption, it's no longer alleged corruption, it's corruption. Corruption for a municipality to be corrupt for more than 30 days, no one does anything. People don't get water, the rubbish is not picked up, because people are saying in the last two financial years, there were these findings about this person and nothing had happened to date. So I'm saying, Chairperson, really, SIU, I'm impressed, but really there's a need to speak up everything else and to be more vocal of the kind of work that they are doing, so that the community can really get some kind of advantage.
Thank you very much. Then I'll come to you.
Just to add, like an example in a municipality in Moses Market and in KZN, Peter Maris or Constantu, it's under administration currently. Under administration, there's an administrator there. The administrator is trying to set up municipal council meetings. Councillors don't also want the meetings to set. Eventually they get a quorum and they set. They throw a stun grenade. They throw a stun grenade in the chamber where the administrator is presenting financials. They throw a stun grenade in there. In the august house, the decorum of the house. It's like even busting a firework in parliament in this august house. Now, straight away in a matter like that, to go to a Tamil village, the SIU must be there. Because the SIP is investigating, what they want to investigate? Nothing. Nothing. They think throwing a stand grenade in the August house, in the chamber, council chamber. Headlines, we are all embarrassed. Headlines are embarrassed. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Whip. Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Well, yesterday we listened as another example, for instance, from the AG, that they sampled about 16 departments, OGs, and out of those, they came up with matters of material irregularity. Which has been to more than 30 irregular material branches. And I look into your report on the investigation you have done with SAPC, and you get there, you investigate, and a number of matters are solidly concluded, and their findings are somewhat made, and there are referrals which are as well made out there. There are costs against such, and therefore the value for investigation is somewhat costed. Now we know that so much has gone out of the mill and so forth, and therefore justification of such investigation has been this. But there are some matters which are critically found, that these matters ought to be referred one way or the other, whether disciplinary or criminal charges, civil claims, they are somewhat made against those. And I find out that out of those, there are things that you can account for civil claims. You stand accountable for such. But do you stand accountable for such because you have referred this matter on various functionaries, whether for criminal prosecution or this and that? So therefore, the follow through on those matters then becomes critical. And then for me, then it spins, Honorable Member, to your Chair, about an example of a municipality that you investigated in, a matter of yellow fleech. You investigated this municipality and the matter of yellow fleech, which bankrupted that municipality and led to a very close closure of the municipality and inability for that municipality to pay salaries, providers, and the municipality was on fire for several months of instances. And there have been findings on such, and that municipality was one of the models, even in terms of its own liquidity. You know, so it was somewhat liquefied by that contract alone made that municipality to be non-functional and close to non-existent. Now they are somewhat this parliament you see is of a knowledge that there are some interventions out there. The investigation happened that time, that year, finding that time, that year, even today, nothing that has happened in terms of such of such outcomes. The question I asked at some stage there, that did you pay those who were involved in terms of coming up with these investigations? Is it Yes, we pay, but there's another invoice which has just come in for us to pay them. Let's say we have done pay them. You see, if they're going to add up to make findings without following those findings, because if they can make findings and have these civil matters, why they can't follow this instance and have a civil matter to get your money back? For the private contractor, which has paid so much anyway, so why do we have to bother to pay them if they can't follow this kind of I was using my cap at the time. I was involved in the process, and I said as well, hold on, and force them to follow through in what they have found out. So that the kind of these kinds of things that happen out there, and people get these kinds of problems if there is no follow through on these kinds of things. The last point for me is that you give us a cost of your investigation to settle claims of about 14 billion. Of those 14.7 billion rands, in totality. I think it happens that once a bit that you are here as a unit, you see, that the prosecution, the actual arrest, and so forth on this matter. Is one other thing, because example must be made on such 14 billion rand when the country is at a critical scenario of lacking such an amount to deliver service. You have money going down the drain, and the follow through becomes so minimal. It means, therefore, your collaborative efforts must be strengthened with other institutions. Thanks for the good work, because you find out that there are these kinds of things that are happening. But other institutions must do their work. As you don't have such power to arrest, to prosecute, and so forth, others will have to, do so. But it means the money. You see, it means injury. It might be good for us through you, through chair, maybe even the chair of the committee, that if you could, for our benefit, when we have these kinds of things, we have some kind of a spreadsheet which is indicative clearly on all the matters that you have followed. Some that you have closed, some that which are still in the flow, and where are they? How long have they been at that point? And what have your expectations going there? So for the times, working institutions are somewhat deranged, and they lose their power because others are doing less in terms of further fulfilling their own duties or tasks. That's where I would want to emphasize, closer to what my colleague has indicated, that our renowned statesman, Bob Mandela, died some years ago. There were findings which were more publicized, and in terms of those findings, it looks like certain things that are supposed to happen, it becomes so difficult to see them happening going forward. The last thing is that in my previous life I was once a mayor of a municipality. When I left a municipality, we left reserves in that municipality. You see, the mayor. And it was so painful to find out how reserves are stifled. They go through decisions which are not well thought of, rushed through, and as a result there will be some kind of findings which lead to criminality at the end. And that same municipality today doesn't have a cent for its own infrastructure. Because Maria, I would tell you that. You see, hundreds of millions went out for contract of a toilet, it's called Sierra. You see, and there's a finding against that. The public protector's report has been published, they offer public knowledge, and there are referrals from that office as well to yourselves in terms of that amount. You see, so those are the kinds of things which are derailing development in other areas. Something we want to see. I'm just citing these as examples. I might not seek response out of them, but things which are frustrating people out there. But this meeting is a meeting for us to be taken to. These are examples of things that you might, at some stage, have an appetite to keep us on. As an example. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me give it to the advocate.
My apologies, please. Chair, forgive me if my ignorance. The last input from advocate was that there seems to be a choice on who should investigate, either SCU or somebody else. I heard that. Is it the case? If that's the case, how correct that is, Chair of SCOPA? Why should we have a lead organ, but it competes with everybody else insofar as the most fundamental thing that is eradicating corruption is concerned? Especially at this day and age, where even highly respected people who have been sitting in such areas in audits and firms and so on, is no longer as clean as we always thought they are. How would you then allow this to happen? That's why I'm saying, please forgive me on my ignorance. Because, for instance, for members of parliament, you only fly SAA. There's Kurula, there's Five Flair, there's everything else, but you fly SAA. Because we're looking after our own. So, where is the problem here? I also give you to yourself honest and chapters. Because I think if that is the case, we'll never eradicate the corruption. Because people change chairs.
Yeah.
Today I'm sitting here, I'm busy in corruption. The other day I'm sitting on the other side, I'm really now a police for corruption. Then you never get rid of this kind of a problem. It's a story.
Thank you very much. You know, I am from Ethiopia municipality. I would stop there altogether because it's still subject as a subject again. We cannot talk about it now. I must tell you, things are happening. Things are happening. As my honorable here talking like this about their provinces, it is coming from bottom of their heart. It's looking like no one wants to listen to us. No one wants to listen to those poor people who are voting every time. How are we going to stop this? People, they don't fear for the law. Law is nothing. Forget it. Why? It's because things are not happening in such a way. The comrade spoke about that the case is taking too long. Even here, I'm worried. It's taking too long
you get the case, it goes to here, there, till even that given will run away or will do whatever they want to do. They are clever, they are too clever for what they are doing. So I will give it to you to respond on what the honor is.
Thank you, Chair. I really think that the presentation has been very good in contextualizing the scope of work. I would just want to put the three or four things in my part of it very quick. To say, as we said yesterday, we've got to meet with people on the ESCOM next week. And we are having a briefing by the auditors on Monday evening before we depart. I would prefer if we can get a briefing on Monday on tutorial,
okay.
Also will be there, just on the ESCOM network, so we get the rest of both angles, so we get the auditors to come in, and to get your perspective on this complex.
So
the details will be complete.
The full details of
yeah.
The role, yeah.
So if not Monday, because of time, because we are arriving, and we'll let you know, could be Tuesday when we come back. But I prefer that we leave having, but we can have a look at it.
Yes.
Also too, but we are in Pretoria and Johannesburg the whole of next week. But we want to meet with the board,
right.
Having received your briefing. So we will work out the times, because the issues on Tuesday were a very early morning, because the drive there is quite far. But we'll work it out, but see,
yeah,
I can just prepare with the photo.
Okay.
We will, of course, I think I must second the proposal made by Austin, so we can get a benevolence to speak about the cases now, since we understand the operation, where each case is, so that we can see how we plug in to unlock where they are, you know, stumbling blocks in that regard. So I'm sure we can schedule that. We'll look at our program as a community, particularly SAPC, because that has been a problem child for the most part. We have communicated with them, and said that we'll be meeting with you, so there is correspondence between us and SAPC, so we will want to tie that down as so far as those issues are concerned. I must say I like the slide on possible collaboration with SCOP, but that one for me works. That's exactly where we need to go. And I'm glad that the Secretariat of the SAPC, too many acronyms, ACTT, too many of them. To say, look, in how we refer cases, let us have a session where we develop that model, how we are to do that, at what point our strategic partner is the AG. We work on the basis of AG reports. So when we receive them in September, October, there will be a bulk of the 300 odd reports are coming through. We're going to sift through and have the hearing. So it's good that we go through the process guided by an established model of operation in terms of how we refer. Okay, so that we do not, we are not airy-fairy.
That's right.
In what we. So it was for that point where I was emphasizing the need for representatives here, so they can understand our approach, our thinking, our rationale from inception, with where was SCOP actually coming from, when it was dealing with this matter, so that you are part, not part of our process, but understand our process, so that we don't have what I call the parliamentary overreach and becoming a plain directory. But if you are working with us, parallel to us, and seeing what we are doing, it helps. Because as you hear the outcry from colleagues, for us the issue is consequent management. We want to get, we need to demonstrate the seriousness by seeing consequences. People must walk the plank. We must get these recoveries of money lost to the business. This position trotting, like mom, what I shall say, today you hear, gone tomorrow, it's like abracadabra kind of situation, because we are not tying down the conflict. So I think we need to look at that particular aspect. You spoke about the amendment. I'm sure we will take the time to look
yes.
at the bill
yeah.
and see how we can make an input with the relevant committee to plug into that. Although we're not a portfolio corporation,
right.
but we've got a keen interest. And, you know, within the end, you know, the problem is when everything has failed, whether it's ACT, whether it's government departments, entities, investigation, portfolio committee, then stop us deal with this. So we find ourselves having to deal with, but no, these things should not have happened if the process was. So it's good that you get an insight into how to plug the holes of the process so that, you know, I was saying, colleagues, if everybody did what they were supposed to do, we would be jobless.
Yes.
And so that, and that's the kind of situation we want. Not that we don't want to work, but the kind of work we are doing speaks to say there are problems even in the system, because people are abusing the system. So we'll have a look at my final question is just to say, how much of a hindrance is the process of proclamation in fast-tracking investigation? Are there bottlenecks there? So that we can also zoom into that, because if you refer the matter, it hinges on proclamation. To what extent is that a problem? So maybe we can build in or build in approaches which categorize the kind of cases which may need proclamation. Others just need an investigation to move and then so we can begin the process. If you can just through your chair, let's look at that particular aspect of as well in terms of whether proclamations are systemized and to the extent to which the problem of the solution is able to.
Thank you very much, Chair. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. We would like to agree with the Honorable Member when it comes to vulnerable sectors. But the numbering there, when we met as a team, was to say, you know, each and every sector there is important. But where do we start to create a model which we can replicate to the other sectors? We started off with health, and the prioritization obviously around health was that we were already having investigations that were going on in the housing health, which has created so much consternation with the public around life as a demand. We're already having some allegations that come in from Health Professions Council, where there were doctor registration irregularities, and there those irregularities were creating bogus doctors, and those bogus doctors were operating on the members of the public, and those are costing lives. So we've got investigations going on now in the Health Professions Council. The investigation is underway. We should be able to find, but we do agree. And in fact, we will table it back at the ACTT as well to say we need to prioritize local government. So we are going to kick off with that to make sure that we can demonstrate the same way that we can demonstrate in health and construction that these are the results since we started focusing on this. And we will actually be happy if we can know. I know that COPA indicated yesterday that we'll be meeting with municipalities and COPTA will be part of that. We humbly request that if we can probably be notified of the session, we can, as part of starting to prioritize the local government, we can then, you know, take insights into that and begin to act on that. We will do so. How do we interact with the public? We have, as I indicated in my presentation, and Ms. Nazrin Pando actually is responsible for that. We have created some platform. Yes, there's an opportunity to improve. Other platforms of interacting with the public, and perhaps you can just take a few minutes to say how, you know, the stakeholder forums that we've had, and how is it that we're going to improve going forward.
Thank you. Honourable members, we currently do have a stakeholder forum that takes place once a year, and as the head of the unit indicated, we can certainly improve on that. What we've been doing previously is having forums in the different provinces and liaising with the offices of the Premier, where we then invite various stakeholders, members of the communities, and we indicate to them what our mandate is, and we try to create awareness. Over and above that, we also have a hotline where we encourage the public to report any transgressions. We also have platforms like Twitter and Instagram where we then solicit and say if there's any whistleblowers or any information that needs to come forth, we advertise our platforms and where they're able to then get hold of us.
So we've actually dealt or held stakeholder forums in all the provinces now, with the exception of Free State and Mpumalanga. Those are the ones that are left now. And once we've had the stakeholder engagement, we start seeing matters flowing, so to speak. But of importance, and we take this to heart from the honourable members, is that you can receive all of these matters and investigate, but where there's no consequence management, there's no actions, we might as well close shop. But we are not about to close shop, because we are determined to make sure that there's actions. And hence those other slides that are indicated on the outcomes. On the NPA, what are we doing to make sure that there's prosecution? On the disciplinary hearing, what are we doing to make sure that there's action? People are disciplined and officials are held accountable, so that we demonstrate consequence management. But we will continue to make sure that really we improve on that, and the collaboration with the other agencies that were here yesterday, be it NPA, Hawks, and the others, we have to make sure. After our meeting yesterday with Honorable Scopa, we conversed at ACTT to make sure that we take from the meeting yesterday and what is it that we're going to improve. Interaction directly with the public, there might probably still be some improvements in identifying other channels where we can target the public directly, other manner that we can use to improve awareness and so on. But up to date, we've done some work, and we can probably identify even more channels that can help us to directly interact with the public. The issue around monitoring of our objectives, that is something that we want to do, and we want to strengthen that, of making sure, ultimately is to make sure that actions are taken, consequence management, because that deters people. If we are to fight this case against corruption, it's for people to know that, you know, that they are being monitored. If there's investigations, there's actions taken, and there's prosecution, or there's disciplinary process, or there's recovery. Right? So, amongst others, what we have spoken to NPA about, because they are the custodians of the asset forfeiture unit, we said even before the prosecutions kick off, or the civil action to recover, we need to make sure that we release asset forfeiture units to freeze the assets, as the honourable member says,
Ikebengwa. You know, they sometimes devise, they probably make it their project to say, how do we make these assets that we've stolen disappear? So we have to make sure that the tools that we have as government work and work for the public, so that we can freeze and get these assets back as quickly as possible. Asset forfeiture unit is there for the purpose, obviously within the laws that regulate asset forfeiture unit. Timelines around the SIU Amendments Act. Yes, in fact, we started this in the previous administration in the 5th. But we were informed by the Department of Justice that the legislative program, you know, was full and they needed to only take those that are being finalized at the end of the 5th administration. We want to believe that we monitor that we are on the front part of this year's legislative program, so that we can start engaging on that. And thanks, Honorable Chair, that this will be also opened up to SCOPA so that they can make inputs. The improvement of governance, yes, the slide that we have included was also with anticipation that there is an expectation that across government we improve the governance. And that's the part that we are also, as part of our investigations, if we read that and find out that there's inefficiencies around governance, we then pronounce ourselves. But we have to do it within ourselves as well. And that's the part that we have presented. We will ensure that it's monitored. The issue around some of the Eastern Cape investigations, in particular the Mandela funeral matters. That's the part that, we may not have the details, but as and when we interact, we'll have details. But the deputy head just whispered into my ear that it's part of those matters that are at the final stage. Do you want to just inform the committee?
Just to comment on the issue of the Mandela funeral investigation. We are investigation in several municipalities. We have concluded the investigation. We are at the reporting stage, and the report will go through the quality review process in the organization, and then from there we will release them. Yes, one of the entities where we're looking into the money spent is the provincial treasury.
So from now, from today, we will obviously, based on the discussions, go and follow up and make sure that wherever in the process that report is, has to be ready for fact, and we do take it to heart. And we must also find out if there have been outcomes. Remember in my presentation that I said the outcomes are reached even before the report. So we have to make sure that if there are outcomes that have been reached, where are they and what's happening? We will make sure that we follow up, and we, through the Secretariat, we can probably submit a written update. I think before we wait for the next meeting, we can do that, and so that the committee can know where we are on that one.
Maybe we can just tie it down into a timeline and look it out.
Sorry for this. If I may, Chairperson, to say, we have SCOPA in front. I think there should be some kind of indirection between us and SCOPA, like we are doing with yourself, so that your provincial unit brief the SCOPA provincial, so that you can all speak from the same page. I tell you, if you can brief the communities like you are doing today, at least there will be some kind of relief that in fact something is being done about this matter. So I think, Chairperson, your counterpart from the province should come closer to, so that we are being coherent in this. Come closer, give us true relationship between themselves and the SIU, and really step by step working together, especially on the national kind of, I don't know whether it's report or allegation. Because Mandela thinks everybody is awaiting to hear when the guy. And if you can just do that in the Eastern Cape, there will be some kind of study because people don't trust us. And they have a right not to, if you really allege to have quite that Mandela funeral money. Yes.
Thank you very much for coming. I think I'll still have to respond.
Yes, there's a few hours of the equipment.
Okay, fine.
The need to move with speed, we've noted that, speed of investigation. Provincial scopus, I think we will really appreciate if one way or another we can have that either introduction or link up with the provincial scopus so that we can also inform the provincial scopus. Chair, if we can be assisted, we are in the Honourable Committee's hands. So that we can reach out. The issue about bogus lawyers, and in the Eastern Cape particularly, we have investigations there, and some of the lawyers are up in arms ever since we have started the investigation. They are putting false claims on the medical legal. We've got a lawyer in Eastern Cape that has been arrested, and he's on 80,000 rand bail. And this we did so that we can show the results. And there's other lawyers that are going to follow. We've been working with the Department of Health in the province, nationally, the Department of Health, and we've found that this is also prevalent in other provinces, particularly Gauteng. We've just received similar allegations from Northern Cape. So we are working now on a national proclamation so that we can cover all that. Moses Mabida, Msunduzi, in fact, again, the deputy just whispered in me. I know that I've looked at the report of Msunduzi, and there are outcomes there. There are very cogent outcomes in that report. So again, we in KZN in particular, just before the end of the fifth administration, we sat down with the premier's office, and the premier himself took him through all the KZN investigations, including this one. Where there are tangible outcomes. So at an appropriate time, we can share with COPA what has happened. What we are seeing, well, it's mainly concentrated in KZN. I mean, there's a report yesterday that a speaker of some municipality escaped an attempted assassination, 11 rounds, you know? It's really sad to see the situation in that space, but our investigators and those of SAPS and of AG, they've at times, you know, felt scared and at times intimidated, at times threatened, but we are making sure that whenever there are those kind of threats, that we work closely with SAPS quickly so that our people feel protected, so that we cannot be deterred in dealing with this matter. So we have noted that. The sample from the AG, I think we've also engaged with the AG, particularly towards the amendment of their legislation and the promulgation. We have now an interaction where they will start referring matters to us so that we can act on those. The point that Honourable Member mentioned, and again, this started in one municipality in Eastern Cape, the Yellow Fleet. The Yellow Fleet, we have investigated this, and we've got outcomes as well, and particularly the civil litigation, where one of the municipalities where this started. I mean, the Yellow Fleet was contracted, but it was just standing there not being used. Members of the public were, you know, starting to ask what's happening, but the money was being paid to this service provider. What have we done? The municipality, at the time when we started, and some few years back, when we started, we then wrote to the municipality that they must initiate a cancellation of the contract, because we determined that contract was entered into fraudulently. The owner
of the company that contracted with the municipality actually gave out as though he's the owner of the Yellow Fleet. In fact, the Yellow Fleet belonged to Balowet. Right? And as a result, there were some fraudulent, transactions, and we identified that, and we went to court and stopped that. We were vilified. The owner of the so-called owner of the Yellow Fleet, I remember that year, went to Mail and Guardian and said we are at court with him, and the people have been denied service and all of that. But we said, if the people are serviced, we would like our people to be serviced legitimately. We don't want any fraudulent activities, and we will go to court and stop this contract and make sure that we recover. And as we started investigating from Eastern Cape, we then saw the threat that this was happening in Northwest as well, and in other provinces. So we've got proclamations going on in other provinces. We believe up to now that we have been able to stop the further contracting of this Yellow Fleet as a result of our intervention. But yet of importance is that we need to determine whether there was any collusion inside the municipalities and the service provider to ensure that is also dealt with. Right. The follow-throughs, we have taken that also to heart. It's part of our strategy. We have to make sure that there's constant follow-throughs to make sure that these referrals are acted on and implemented. The issue around 14.7 billion, yes, we understand that it's a big number. If we recover it, it can assist government in terms of service delivery initiatives. But we have since identified that the delays are in the courts. The courts are blocked, the record rolls are high, but that is why we have now initiated the establishment of this special, you can refer to it as a special court, but in the legislation it's referred to as a special tribunal. This special tribunal is going to help us, honorable members, so that where these matters have not started in the ordinary court, we are able to channel them through to the special tribunal and see the speedy recoveries. The judges have been appointed that are going to serve on the special tribunal. There's a tribunal president appointed. We are just waiting for the regulations to be completed so that it can start functioning by October. Choice of who should investigate. Yes, we did say that. We do still find that most of the state institutions still appoint private companies. And we've identified that private companies, when they do the work, they leave the work as incomplete because they do not have powers that law enforcement agencies have. And in some instances, and although this is just our view, if I appoint an investigator privately, there's some risk that at some point we will articulate. So we would like enhance as part of our SCOPA interaction if the state institutions should actually be encouraged to refer matters to us, but we may want to build this in the legislation. So that state institutions refer matters to state institutions, so law enforcement agencies within government. But yes, and we are aware that we have to demonstrate that we are capable. We have to demonstrate that we do all that the committee is asking us to do, investigate properly, quality, outcomes, make sure that the outcomes are implemented. That's what we need to demonstrate. Etchegwini municipalities, we can probably do similarly as we interact with SCOPA, provincial SCOPAs. We can take the committee through what is it that's happening in that space and what is it that we are doing. But on this Mandela one, we really take that to heart. The statement passed on a while back, and what has happened is something that no one appreciates. We will make sure that we give feedback on that one. Honorable Chair, yes, we've done. There's a new proclamation, and I call it new because it's not so long that it is running. We will prepare a comprehensive presentation on ESCOM, which we can share with the committee. SABC, we are prepared to interact with the committee at an appropriate time. We'll hear from the committee so that we can take you through other matters which we have included in the presentation, but we couldn't go through it in detail. We can go through it in detail at an appropriate time. How to refer matters to ACTT or SIU, we will work with ACTT so that we can also strengthen on those modules of referral. Amendments to our Act, I think we touched on that. Hindrance by the proclamation process. When we started all this strategic reviews, the length it takes to investigate, the length it takes to convert matters into proclamation, we also assessed the time it takes to get a proclamation. And we identified that there were inefficiencies in the process. What did we do? At the time, it was I think in 2017 already, we have raised it with the Department of Justice and with the Presidency at the time. And then we concluded a memorandum of understanding where we now have timelines. So that if it takes beyond the timeline that we've determined, we're able to follow up and say, where is it? But in the main, it's an aspect of our work that it does indeed, because if the whistleblower reports to us, we have to make sure it's legislated. We have to make sure that it goes through the proclamation process so that it is legal in that sense. So there's two ways. Either to propose in the amendment that we do away with the proclamation process. That is a moot point. It's something that we still need to engage on. The second point is, if the proclamation process is appropriate and works, we must make sure that the time it takes to convert the allegations into proclamations is not lengthy. And this is what we have done, to make sure that we give timelines to the time of the drafting of the proclamation to the Department of Justice and to the President. So we have got a structure that monitors that process. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair. We have the head of the domestic intelligence. What's the head of?
Okay.
No. Well, what is it? Position? A position? Head of?
Chair, the director of domestic branch.
Thank you very much. See, my understanding of that is that he analyzed that any domestic threat, internal threat in the country. You see, the thing of municipalities, you must take note of this here, advocate, that it's posing a serious domestic threat to us. If we're not going to deal with these municipalities, the city where I come from, there's a total breakdown of law and order in the city, where a dispute between the city and the taxi association, because they cannot provide the taxi facilities. So the taxi decided just to take one whole main street as a taxi rank, and they have been ranking there for over a month. And then, because of that, motorists now have to break the traffic rules in the city to be moved driving around to such an extent where there was a total breakdown of traffic enforcement in the city. Then the national minister of police comes because he believes that there is some in the traffic department some guns were used in political killings. He then confiscates all the firearms of the traffic department for policing are still sitting there. The traffic officers say, we are not going to put our lights on because we have no cars. They're not doing their work. A total breakdown of traffic law enforcement in the city. Then motors, every motorist breaks the traffic laws. I am forced to break the traffic laws when I break code to drive them, drive robots, but I will not make it home. And it's just chaos. Now this is a serious domestic threat. And then communities lose respect for authority and they're constantly marching and blocking streets and spamming. Look, and that's the capital city. If we're not going to deal with the issue of municipalities, it's going to pose a serious domestic threat to this country. So you say you need to look into this thing and you need to come on board and assist with this thing. We need to deal with it.
Thank you very much. We must just come to Wamashu. I will give you a room to stay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much, Advocate and your team. We really appreciate you being here. Bosoma has highlighted that we are meeting under full the country. Moving forward to the accountability. But we need to understand the space you're operating in before we kick into motion accountability here. So we hold you accountable to what it is that you are accountable for. And we do not shoot off the hip. So we thank you. So we really appreciate it that you are here, and I'm hopeful that we will firm up the issues which are what then we sorted out today. To SSA, we're glad that you're here. We also have matters with you that you owe the committee arising out of our legacy report. I'm sure you will be receiving communication once we've tied down our program, amongst other things. Your slow pace of vetting of those in the SDM sector as per the cabinet decision of 2014. That remains fundamentally an issue for us. So do expect a love letter from us inviting you to appear. But I'm glad that you are here, and I think you have understood as well the direction that the committee wants to take. That for us, we want to be solution oriented. We want to be first consequence managed. We don't want to just be a talk show. And so yesterday I said if it was a polygamy, the AG is the principal wife for this committee. And SIU, SACTT, and SSA, and so on, no man. So we are in this together. We are in this together. Colleagues, on that note, thank you. Invite you to join us for lunch. Colleagues, we will have a mini caucus meeting for the committee at 2, and I'm sure we'll be done by half time. So lunch, then we come back, and then we go to work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah.
Yay! Le econ, le econ, even good. In the app, for banners are full. You? So I'm still a little bit for the app.
Okay, no, I'm not going to get a lot of money. I'll just